Igor stood mutely in front of the recruiting table. "Don't often see you people these days," said Jackram.
"Yeah, run out of fresh brains, have you?" said the corporal nastily.
"Now then, corporal, no call for that," said the sergeant, leaning back in his creaking chair. "There's plenty of lads out there walking around on legs they wouldn't still have if there hadn't been a friendly Igor around. Hey, Igor?"
"Yeah. Well, I heard about people waking up and finding their friendly Igor had whipped out their brains in the middle of the night and buggered off to flog 'em," said the corporal, glaring at Igor.
"I promise you, your brain is entirely safe from me, corporal," said Igor.
Polly started to laugh and stopped when she realised that absolutely no one else was doing so.
"Yeah, well, I met a sergeant who said an Igor put a man's legs on backwards," said Corporal Strappy. "What good's that to a soldier, eh?"
"Could advance and retreat at the same time," said Igor levelly. "Sergeant, I know all the stories, and they are nothing but vile calumnies. I seek only to serve my country. I do not want trouble."
"Right," said the sergeant. "Nor do we. Make your mark, and you've got to promise not to mess about with Corporal Strappy's brain, right?" "Another signature? My word, I can see we've got ourselves a bleeding college of recruits today. Give him his cardboard shilling, corporal."
"Thank you," said Igor. "And I would like to give the picture a wipe, if it's all the same to you."
He produced a small cloth.
"Wipe it?" said Strappy. "Is that a lad, sergeant?"
"What do you want to wipe it for, mister?" said Jackram.
"To remove the invisible demons," said Igor.
"I can't see any invis—" Strappy began,
and stopped.
"Just let him, all right," said Jackram. "It's one of their funny little ways."
"Don't seem right," muttered Strappy. "Practically treason."
"Can't see why it'd be wrong just to give the old girl a wash," said the sergeant shortly. "Next." "Oh."
After carefully wiping the stained picture and giving it a perfunctory peck, Igor came and stood next to Polly, giving her a sheepish grin. But she was watching the next recruit. He was short and quite slim, which was fairly usual in a country where it was rare to get enough food to make you fat. But he dressed in black and expensively, like an aristocrat. He even had a sword. The sergeant was, therefore, looking worried. Clearly, a man could get into trouble, talking wrong to a knob who might have important friends.
"You sure you come to the right place, sir?" he said.
"Yes, sergeant, I wish to enlist."
Sergeant Jackram shifted uneasily.
"Yes, sir, but I'm sure a gentleman like you. Are you going to enlist me or not, sergeant?"
"Not usual for a gentleman to enlist as a common soldier, sir," mumbled the sergeant.
"What you mean, sergeant, is anyone after me? Is there a price on my head? And the answer is no."
"How about a mob with pitchforks?" said Corporal Strappy. "He's a bloody vampire, Sarge. Anyone can see that. He's a black ribboner. Look, he's got the badge."
"Which says not one drop," said the young man calmly. "Not one drop of human blood, sergeant. A prohibition I have accepted for almost 2 years, thanks to the League of Temperance. Of course, if you have a personal objection, sergeant, you need only give it to me in writing."
Which was quite a clever thing to say, Polly thought. Those clothes cost serious money. Most of the vampire families were highly nobby. You never knew who was connected to who. Not just to who, in fact, but to whom. Whoms were likely to be far more trouble than your common everyday who. The sergeant was looking down a mile of rough road.
"Got to move with the times, corporal," he said, deciding not to go there. "And we certainly need the men."
"Yeah, but supposing he wants to suck all my blood out in the middle of the night," said Strappy.
"Well, he'll just have to wait until Private Igor's finished looking for your brain, won't he?"
snapped the sergeant.
"Sign here, mister."
The pen scratched on the paper. After a minute or two, the vampire turned the paper over and continued writing on the other side. Vampires had long names.
"But you can call me Maledict," he said, dropping the pen back in the inkwell.
"Thank you very much, I must say, sir, private. Give him the shilling, corporal. Good job it's not a silver one, eh?"
"Yes," said Maledict, "it is."
"Next," said the sergeant.
Polly watched as a farm boy, breeches held up with string, shuffled in front of the table and looked at the quill pen with the resentful perplexity of those confronted with new technology. She turned back to the bar. The landlord glared at her in the manner of bad landlords everywhere. As her father always said, if you kept an inn, you either liked people or went mad. Oddly enough, some of the mad ones were the best at looking after their beer, but by the smell of the place, this wasn't one of those. She leaned on the bar. "Pint, please," she said, and watched glumly as the man gave a scowl of acknowledgement and turned to the big barrels. It'll be sour, she knew, with the slop bucket under the tap tipped back in every night, and the spigot not put back, and, yes, it was going to be served in a leather tankard that had probably never been washed. A couple of new recruits were already knocking back their pints, though, with every audible sign of enjoyment. But this was Plune, after all. Anything that made you forget you were there was probably worth drinking. One of them said, "Lovely pint this, eh?" And the boy next to him belched and said, "Best I've tasted, yeah." Polly sniffed at the tankard. The contents smelled like something she wouldn't feed to pigs. She took a sip and completely changed her opinion. She would feed it to pigs. "Those lads have never tasted beer before," she told herself. "It's like Dad said. Out in the country there are lads who join up for an uninhabited pair of breeches. And they'll drink this muck and pretend to enjoy it like men. Hey, up, we supped some stuff last night, eh, lads? And then next thing..." Oh, Lord, that reminded her. What would the privy be like here? The men's one out in the yard back at home was bad enough. Polly sloshed two big pails of water into it every morning while trying not to breathe. There was weird green moss growing on the slate floor, and the Duchess was a good inn. It had customers who took their boots off before going to bed. She narrowed her eyes. This stupid fool in front of her, a man making one long eyebrow do the work of two, was serving them slops and foul vinegar just before they marched off to war.
"This beer," said Igor on her right, "tastes of horse-pith."
Polly stood back. Even in a bar like this, that was killing talk.
"Oh, you'd know, would you?" said the barman, looming over the boy. "Drunk horse-piss, have you?"
"Yes," said Igor.
The barman stuck a fist in front of Igor's face.
"Now you listen to me, you lisping little—"
A slim black arm appeared with amazing speed, and a pale hand caught the man's wrist. The one eyebrow contorted in sudden agony.
"Now it's like this," said Maledict calmly. "We're soldiers of the Duchess, agreed. Just say arg."
He must have squeezed. The man groaned.
"Thank you. And you're serving up as beer a liquid best described as foul water,"
Maledict went on, in the same level conversational tone.
"I, of course, don't drink horse piss, but I have a highly developed sense of smell, and really would prefer not to list aloud the things I can smell in this murk. So we'll just say rat droppings and leave it at that, shall we? Just whimper. Good man."
At the end of the bar, one of the new recruits threw up. Maledict nodded with satisfaction. The barman's fingers had gone white.
"Incapacitating a soldier of Her Grace in wartime is a treasonable offence," he said. He leaned forward. "Punishable, of course, by death."
Maledict pronounced the word with a certain delight.
"However, if there happened to be another barrel of beer around the place, you know, good stuff, the stuff you'd keep for your friends, if you had any friends, then I'm sure we could forget this little incident. Now I'm going to let go of your wrist. I can tell by your eyebrow that you are a thinker. And if you're thinking of rushing back in here with a big stick, I'd like you to think about this instead. I'd like you to think about this black ribbon I'm wearing. Know what it means, do you?"
The barman winced and mumbled, "Temperance League?"
"Right. Well done," said Maledict. "And one more thought for you, if you've got room. I've only taken a pledge not to drink human blood. It doesn't mean I can't kick you in the fork so hard you suddenly go deaf."
He released his grip. The barman slowly straightened up. Under the bar he would have a short wooden club, Polly knew. Every bar had one. Even her father had one. It was a great help, he said, in times of worry and confusion. She saw the fingers of the usable hand twitch.
Don't, she said. I think he means it.
The barman relaxed.
Bit of a misunderstanding there, gents, he mumbled. Got the wrong barrel in. No offence meant.
He shuffled off, his hand almost visibly throbbing.
I only said it was horse pith, said Igor.
He won't cause trouble, said Polly to Maledict. He'll be your friend from now on. He's worked out he can't beat you, so he's going to be your best mate.
Maledict subjected her to a thoughtful stare.
I know that, he said. How do you?
I used to work in an inn, said Polly, feeling her heart begin to beat faster, as it always did when the lies lined up. You learn to read people.
What did you do in the inn?
Barman.
There is another inn in this hole, is there?
Oh, no, I'm not from round here.
Polly groaned at the sound of her own voice and waited for the question, then why come here to join up? It didn't come. Instead, Maledict just shrugged and said,
I shouldn't think anyone is from around here.
A couple more new recruits arrived at the bar. They had the same look, sheepish, a bit defiant, in clothes that didn't fit very well. Eyebrow reappeared with a small keg, which he laid reverentially on a stand and gently tapped. He pulled a genuine pewter tankard from under the bar, filled it, and timorously proffered it to Maledict.
Igor, said the vampire, waving it away.
I'll stick with the horse pith, if it's all the same to you, said Igor.
He looked around the sudden silence.
Look, I never said I didn't like it, said Igor.
He pushed his mug across the sticky bar.
Same again.
Polly took the new tankard and sniffed at it. Then she took a sip.
Not bad, she said. At least it tastes like it's...
The door pushed open, letting in the sounds of the storm. About two-thirds of a troll eased its way inside, and then managed to get the rest of itself through. Polly was okay about trolls. She met them up in the woods sometimes, sitting among the trees or purposefully lumbering along the tracks on the way to whatever it was trolls did. They weren't friendly, they were resigned. The world's got humans in it. Live with it. They're not worth the indigestion. You can't kill 'em all. Step around 'em. Stepping on 'em doesn't work in the long term. Occasionally, a farmer would hire one to do some heavy work. Sometimes they turned up, sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they'd turn up, lumber around a field pulling out tree stumps as if they were carrots, and then wander off without waiting to be paid. A lot of things humans did mystified trolls, and vice versa. Generally, they avoided one another. But she didn't often see trolls as trollish as this one. It looked like a boulder that had spent centuries in the damp pine forests. Lichen covered it. Stringy grey moss hung in curtains from its head and its chin. It had a bird's nest in one ear. It had a genuine troll club, made from an uprooted sapling. It was almost a joke troll, except that no one would laugh. The root end of the sapling bumped across the floor as the troll, watched by the recruits and a horrified Corporal Strappy, trudged to the table.
"Gonna enlist," it said. "Gonna do my bit. Gimme shilling."
"You're a troll," Strappy burst out.
"Now, now, none of that, Corporal," said Sergeant Jackram. "Don't ask, don't tell."
"Don't ask? Don't ask? It's a troll, Sarge. It's got crags. There's grass growing under its fingernails. It's a troll."
"Right," said the sergeant. "Enlist him." "You want to fight with us?" Strappy squeaked.
Trolls had no sense of personal space, and a ton of what was, for practical purposes, a kind of rock, was looming right over the table. The troll analysed the question. The recruits stood in silence, mugs halfway to mouths.
"No," said the troll at last. "Gonna fight. We're an army. God save the..."
The troll paused and looked at the ceiling. Whatever it was seeking there didn't appear to be visible. Then it looked at its feet, which had grass growing on them. Then it looked at its free hand and moved its fingers as if counting something.
"Duchess,"
it said. It had been a long wait. The table creaked as the troll laid a hand on it, palm upwards.
"Gimme shilling."
"We've only got bits of paper,"
Corporal Strappy began. Sergeant Jackram jabbed an elbow into his ribs.
"Upon my oath, are you mad?" he hissed. "There's a 10-man bounty for enlisting a troll."
With his other hand, he reached into his jacket pocket, pulled out a real silver shilling, and placed it delicately in the huge hand.
"Welcome to your new life, friend. I'll just write your name down, shall I? What is it?"
The troll looked at the ceiling, feet, sergeant, wall, and table. Polly saw its lips move.
"Corberundum,"
it volunteered.
"Yeah, probably," said the sergeant. How would you like to shave, to cut off some of that hair, moss? We've got a sort of regulation."
Wall, floor, ceiling, table, fingers, sergeant.
"No,"
said Carborundum.
Right, said the sergeant quickly. "It's not a regulation as per such, actually. It's more of an advisory. Silly one, Tui, I've always thought so. Glad to have you with us," he added fervently.
The troll licked the coin, which gleamed like a diamond in its hand. It actually did have grass growing under its fingernails too, Polly noticed. Then Carborundum trudged to the bar. The crowd parted instantly, because a troll never had to stand at the back of the press of bodies waving money and trying to catch the barman's eye. He broke the coin in two and dropped both halves on the bar top. Eyebrow swallowed. He looked as though he would have said, "Are you sure?" except that this was not a question barman addressed to people weighing over half a ton. Carborundum thought for a while and then said,
"Gimme drink."
Eyebrow nodded, disappeared briefly into the room behind the bar, and came back holding a double-handed mug. Maledict sneezed. Polly's eyes watered. It was the kind of smell you sense with your teeth. The pub might make foul beer as a matter of course, but this was eye-stinging vinegar. Eyebrow dropped one half of the silver coin into it, and then took a copper penny out of the money drawer and held it over the fuming mug. The troll nodded. With just a hint of ceremony, like a cocktail waiter dropping the little umbrella into a double entendre, Eyebrow let the copper fall. More bubbles welled up. Igor watched with interest. Carborundum picked the mug up in two fingers of each shovel-like hand and swallowed the contents in one gulp. He stood stock still for a moment, then carefully put the mug back on the bar.
"You gentlemen might like to move back a bit," murmured Eyebrow.
"What's going to happen?" said Polly.
"It takes them all differently," said Eyebrow. "Looks like this one's... No, there he goes."
With considerable style, Carborundum went over backwards. There was no sagging at the knees, no girly attempt to soften the fall. He just went from standing up, one hand out, to lying down, one hand up. He even rocked gently for some time after hitting the floor.
"Got no head for his drink," said Eyebrow. "Typical of the young bucks. Wants to play the big troll, come in here, order an electric floor banger, doesn't know how to handle it."
"Is he going to come around?" said Maledict.
"No, that's it until dawn, I reckon," said Eyebrow. "Brain stops working." "Shouldn't affect him too much, then," said Corporal Strappy, stepping up. "Right, you miserable lot. You're sleeping in the shed out the back, understand? Practically waterproof, hardly any rats. We're out of here at dawn. You're in the army now."
Polly lay in the dark, on a bed of musty straw. There was no question of anyone getting undressed. The rain hammered on the roof and the wind blew through a crack under the door, despite Igor's efforts to stuff it with straw. There was some desultory conversation, during which Polly found out that she was sharing the dank shed with Tonka Halter, Shufty Manacle, Wazza Goom, and Lofty Toot. Maledict and Igor didn't seem to have acquired repeatable nicknames. She'd become Ozza by general agreement. Slightly to Polly's surprise, the boy now known as Wozza had taken a small picture of the Duchess out of his pack and nervously hung it on an old nail. No one else said anything as he prayed to it. It was what you were supposed to do. They said the Duchess was dead. Polly had been washing up when she'd heard the men talking late one night, and it's a poor woman who can't eavesdrop while making a noise at the same time. Dead, they said, but the people up at Prince Marmaduke Piotr Albert Hans Josef Bernhard Wilhelmsburg weren't admitting it. That was 'cause what with there being no children, and with royalty marrying one another's cousins and grannies all the time, the ducal throne would go to the Prince Heinrich of Slovenia. There, can you believe it? That's why we never see her, right? And there hasn't been a new picture all these years. Makes you think, eh? Oh, they say she's been in mourning 'cause of the young duke, but that was more than 70 years ago. They say she was buried in secret, and... At which point her father had stopped the speaker dead. There are some conversations where you don't even want people to remember you were in the same room. Dead or alive, the Duchess watched over you. The recruits tried to sleep. Occasionally someone belched or expelled wind noisily, and Polly responded with a few fake eructations of her own. That seemed to inspire greater effort on the part of the other sleepers, to the point where the roof rattled and dust fell down, before everyone subsided. Once or twice she heard people stagger out into the windy darkness, in theory for the privy, but probably, given male impatience in these matters, to aim much closer to home. Once, coasting in and out of a troubled dream, she thought she heard someone sobbing. Taking care not to rustle too much, Polly pulled out the much-folded, much-read, much-stained last letter from her brother, and read it by the light of the solitary, guttering candle. It had been opened and heavily mangled by the censers, and bore the stamp of the duchy. It read, "Dear all, we are in blank, which is blank with a blank big thing with knobs. On blank, we with blank, which is just as well because blank out of. I am keeping well. The food is blank. Blank will blank at the blank. But my mate Blanker says not to worry, it'll all be over by blank, and we shall all have medals. Chins up, Paul." It was in a careful hand, the excessively clear and well-shaped writing of someone who had to think about every letter. She folded it up again. Paul had wanted medals because they were shiny. That had been almost a year ago, when any recruiting party that came past went away with the best part of a battalion, and there had been people waving them off with flags and music. Sometimes, now, smaller parties of men came back. The lucky ones were missing only one arm or one leg. There were no flags. She unfolded the other piece of paper. It was a pamphlet. It was headed, "From the Mothers of Borogravia." The mothers of Borogravia were very definite about wanting to send their sons off to war against the Slovenian aggressor, and used a great many exclamation points to say so. And this was odd, because the mothers in the town had not seemed keen on the idea of their sons going off to war, and positively tried to drag them back. Several copies of the pamphlet seemed to have reached every home even so. It was very patriotic. That is, it talked about killing foreigners. She'd learned to read and write after a fashion because the inn was big and it was a business and things had to be tallied and recorded. Her mother had taught her to read, which was acceptable to Nuggan, and her father made sure that she learned how to write, which was not. A woman who could write was an abomination unto Nuggan, according to Father Jupe. Anything she wrote would by definition be a lie. But Polly had learned anyway because Paul hadn't, at least to the standard needed to run an inn as busy as the Duchess. He could read, if he could run his finger slowly along the lines, and he could write letters painfully, with a lot of care and heavy breathing, like a man assembling a piece of jewellery. He was big and kind and slow, and could lift beer kegs as though they were toys, but he wasn't a man at home with paperwork. Their father had hinted to Polly, very gently but very often, that Polly would need to be right behind him when the time came for him to run the Duchess. Left to himself, with no one to tell him what to do next, her brother just stood and watched birds. At Paul's insistence,
she'd read the whole of From the Mothers of Borogravia to him, including the bits about heroes and there being no greater good than to die for your country. She wished, now, she hadn't done that. Paul did what he was told. Unfortunately, he believed what he was told, too. She put the papers away and dozed again until her bladder woke her up. Oh, well, at least at this time of morning she'd have a clear run. She reached out for her pack and stepped as softly as she could out into the rain. It was mostly just coming off the trees now, which were roaring in the wind that blew up the valley. The moon was hidden in the clouds, but there was just enough light to make out the inn's buildings. A certain greyness suggested that what passed for dawn in Plune was on the way. She located the men's privy, which indeed stank of inaccuracy. A lot of planning and practice had gone into this moment. She was helped by the design of her breeches, which were the old-fashioned kind with generous buttoned trapdoors, and also by the experiment she'd made very early in the mornings when she was doing the cleaning. In short, with care and attention to detail, she'd found that a woman could pee standing up. It certainly worked back home in the inn's privy, which had been designed and built with the certain expectation of the aimlessness of the customers. The wind shook the dank building. In the dark, she thought of Auntie Hattie, who'd gone a bit strange around her 60th birthday and persistently accused passing young men of looking up her dress. She was even worse after a glass of wine, and she had one joke. "What does a man stand up to do, a woman sit down to do, and a dog lift its leg to do?" And then, when everyone was too embarrassed to answer, she'd triumphantly shriek, "Shake hands!" and fall over. Auntie Hattie was an abomination all by herself. Polly buttoned up the breeches with a sense of exhilaration. She felt she'd crossed a bridge, a sensation that was helped by the realisation that she'd kept her feet dry. Someone said, "Psst." It was just as well she'd already taken a leak. Panic instantly squeezed every muscle. Where were they hiding? This was just a rotten old shed. Oh, there were a few cubicles, but the smell alone suggested very strongly that the woods outside would be a much better proposition. Even on a wild night. Even with extra wolves. "Yes?" she quavered, and then cleared her throat and demanded, with a little more gruffness, "Yes?"
"You'd need these,"
whispered the voice. In the fetid gloom, she made out something rising over the top of the cubicle. She reached up nervously and touched softness. It was a bundle of wool. Her fingers explored it.
"A pair of socks," she said. "Right. Wear 'em," said the mystery voice hoarsely.
"Thank you, but I've brought several pairs," Polly began. There was a faint sigh.
"No, not on your feet. Shove 'em down the front of your trousers."
"What do you mean?"
"Look," said the whisperer patiently. "You don't bulge where you shouldn't bulge. That's good. But you don't bulge where you should bulge either. You know, lower down."
"Oh, I didn't think people noticed," said Polly, glowing with embarrassment. She had been spotted. But there was no hue and cry, no angry quotations from the Book of Nuggan. Someone was helping. Someone who had seen her.
"It's a funny thing," said the voice, "but they notice what's missing more than they notice what's there. Just one pair, mark you. Don't get ambitious."
Polly hesitated. "Is it obvious?" she said.
"No, that's why I gave you the socks."
"I meant that I'm not... that I'm..."
"Not really," said the voice in the dark. "You're pretty good. You come over as a frightened young lad trying to look big and brave. You might pick your nose a bit more often. Just a tip. Few things interest a young man more than the contents of his nostrils. Now, I've got a favour to ask you in return."
I didn't ask you for one, Polly thought, quite annoyed at being taken for being a frightened young lad, when she was sure she'd come over as quite a cool, non-ruffled young lad. But she said calmly, "What is it?"
"Got any paper?"
Wordlessly, Polly pulled From the Mothers of Borogravia out of her shirt and handed it up. She heard the sound of a match striking,
and a sulphurous smell that only improved the general conditions.
"Why, is this the escutcheon of Her Grace the Duchess I see in front of me?"
said the Whisperer.
"Well, it won't be in front of me for long. Beat it, boy!"
Polly hurried out into the night, shocked, dazed, confused, and almost asphyxiated, and made it to the shed door. But she'd barely shut it behind her and was blinking in the blackness when it was thrust open again and let in the wind, rain, and Corporal Strappy.
All right, hands off! Well, you lot won't be able to find 'em, and on with socks! Hup, 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 hi-ho, hup, hup!"
Bodies were suddenly springing up or falling over all around Polly. Their muscles must have been obeying the voice directly, because no brain could have got into gear that quickly. Corporal Strappy, in obedience to the law of non-commissioned officers, responded by making the confusion more confusing.
"Good grief, you lot of old women could shift better than you!" he shouted with satisfaction as people flailed around looking for their coats and boots. "Fall in! Get shaved! Every man in the regiment to be clean-shaven by order! Get dressed! Wazza, I've got my eye on you! Move, move! Breakfast in 5 minutes! Last one there doesn't get a sausage! Oh, deary me, what a bloody shower!"
The four lesser apocalyptical horsemen of panic, bewilderment, ignorance, and shouting took control of the room, to Corporal Strappy's obscene glee. Polly, though, ducked out the door, pulled a small tin mug out of her pack, dipped it into a water butt, balanced it on an old barrel behind the inn, and started to shave. She'd practiced this, too. The secret was in the old cutthroat razor that she'd carefully blunted. After that, it was all in the shaving brush and soap. Get a lot of lather on, shave a lot of lather off. And you'd had a shave, hadn't you? Must have done, sir. Feel how smooth the skin is. She was halfway through when a voice by her ear screamed,
"What do you think you're doing, Private Parts?"
It was just as well the blade was blunt.
"Perks, sir," she said, rubbing her nose. "I'm shaving, sir. It's Perks, sir."
"Sir? Sir? I'm not a Sir Parts. I'm a bloody Corporal Parts. That means you call me Corporal Parts. And are you shaving in an official regimental mug, Parts, what you have not been issued with, right? You a deserter, Parts?"
"No, sir, Corporal."
"A thief, then?"
"No, Corporal."
"Then how come you got a bloody mug, Parts?"
"Got it off a dead man, sir, Corporal."
Strappy's voice, pitched into a scream in any case, became a screech of rage.
"You're a looter?"
"No, Corporal. The soldier..."
had died almost in her arms on the floor of the inn. There had been half a dozen men in that party of returning heroes. They must have been trekking with grey-faced patients for days, making their way back to little villages in the mountains. Polly counted 9 arms and 10 legs between them, and 10 eyes. But it was the apparently whole who were worse, in a way. They kept their stinking coats buttoned tight, in lieu of bandages over whatever unspeakable mess lay beneath, and they had the smell of death about them. The inn's regulars made space for them, and talked quietly, like people in a sacred place. Her father, not usually a man given to sentiment, quietly put a generous tot of brandy into each mug of ale and refused all payment. Then it turned out that they were carrying letters from soldiers still fighting, and one of them had brought the letter from Paul. He pushed it across the table to Polly as she served them stew, and then, with very little fuss, he died.